Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away for another Vaughan boundary.
Well, he's a great fieldsman, Philip Tufnell. He often falls over, and he's brought it into his batting as well.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Vaughan and Tuffers Cricket Club podcast, brought to you by The Telegraph. Ben, Michael and Phil with you as always. You wait all summer for an England win, and then three come along at once. England men beat Australia at Headingley to claw the series tally back to 2-1, and the women beat their Aussie counterparts in the T20 format at the Oval and then Lords to keep their series alive too. To quote Mark Wood, the sage of Ashington, woohoo! Delighted to say our guest today is a man who is no stranger to drama at Headingley, England spinner Jack Leach, who is, of course, currently out of the squad with injury. And with a week to go until the start of the next Test match, we'll check in once again with Nick Holt about how Brendan McCullum will use the crucial rest period between games. Spoiler alert, we imagine there might be some golf played. Right, what is it about Headingley?
Oh, the northern air. Something about that place. I have to say, I mean, I just think it's... it's a great cricket wicket. I think the groundsman this week, Richard Robinson, he's an ex... teammate of mine back in the 90s. I played a bit of cricket for the Yorkshire Academy and seconds with Richard. He produced the best cricket wicket that I've seen for a long, long time. It had pace, it had bounce, there was movement. I'm sure if it had been a five-day game, we'd have seen a bit of spin. I just think the pitch at Headingley, the conditions, when it's sunny, it pretty much is a flat one. When the clouds roll in, it starts to do a bit. The crowd are always right behind the England side. You know, it's a raucous atmosphere. You just get venues like that, don't you, that suddenly you get there and you just feel something special could happen. You know, you very rarely get a dull week at Headingley. You go back over the years, the chase against New Zealand. I remember that game against the West Indies when the West Indies chased down that big target when Joe was captain. I remember Jimmy Anderson getting out against Sri Lanka, the penultimate ball of the Test match. It's a great cricket wicket. Absolutely staggered that in 2027, the Ashes will not be there. Absolutely bonkers.
Yeah. It's one of those places. It's one of those places that, as you say, you know, you get full value for your runs. I've never seen a quicker outfield in my life. It was just, even with all the Australians back on the boundary, if it's not within a couple of yards of you, it's four. And it just generates that feeling that you can do whatever you can get there. You can do it. If you play well, if you bowl well early on, there's always something there to get a wicket. If you get over that time, you can really put your hammer down. I mean, look at Mitch Marsh's innings. I mean, that was incredible as well. So it just does that. You get value for good cricket and positive cricket at Headingley.
Can I just carry on about Headingley just for a brief second? He said that you can't have everything. I mean, the pitch was great. The outfield was rapid. The crowd are incredible. Of all the grounds, I've never eaten food as bad in all my life.
It was
absolutely revolting.
Yeah. I mean, I remember you saying this last year.
Phil, explain some of the dishes that we had this week.
Well, I can't understand it. It was confusing food. It was like a sort of a strange mix in your mouth. You'd have sort of macaroni and cheese with sort of coleslaw with all sort of like, I don't know, lychees and things. It was very strange. I know, it was weird.
Ben, I had a prawn pasta.
Yeah.
With that, I had an onion bhaji. Right? With that, I had some chicken goujon. And on the side of that, I had a steak and cheese sandwich.
Okay.
Come on. It was awful. But the cricket, the ground, the atmosphere, it was a brilliant match. Ebbed and flowed. You know, England came out of the traps with the early wickets. They were brilliant. They were on it. We've spoken about that first day at Lord's when they won the toss and bowled. They did the same at Headingley.
Yeah.
Even though catches went down and you know, they are costing, even though they won the test, they can't keep dropping chances. England were really on it. The body language, the intensity. And then Mitchell Marsh just played a gem, you know, in that afternoon. And then England bounced back late in the day. Throughout the whole game, it was like every time a team got in front, they'd allow the opposition back in. And that kind of carried on right through to the last hour of play. It was a brilliant, brilliant game of cricket.
Also, Mark Wood.
Yeah.
Mark Wood with the ball in his hand.
Ooh.
Oh, what? Absolute box office. I mean, I was wincing, you know, having been in that situation waiting to come in as a tail-ender.
Absolute box office,
around me. That was rapid. I don't think I've seen, Mike, you could probably tell a bit better. I don't think I've seen quicker spells of bowling than that. That visibly shook the Australians, believe me. And that tail came
rattled.
Out. Rattled them. It rattled them. And that tail came out. And listen, they didn't fancy it. And that's what pace does to you. I mean, it wasn't just banging billy stuff. It was pitch up, swing. It was good, but it was fantastic to see.
But since all the numbers have been registered in international cricket, that was the quickest spell.
Yeah.
You know, so Mark Wood in the first inning, I think he averaged 90.5 miles an hour. The next quickest was Brett Lee in 2005, I think at 89.5. That's throughout whole, I think, innings of bowling. So it was, I've been around cricket for 30 odd years. I remember watching Mitchell Johnson bowl a spell. Cool. I think it was in Perth in 2010. That was express. I faced it a few half decent spells of quick bowling, but I've never seen a bowl as fast as Mark Wood.
No.
When I've been there watching live, that first spell that he bowled, the first over, he got one to 96.5 miles per hour.
Yes.
I mean, I've not seen anything as good. In the second innings when he was a bit tired, you know, he got to about 89, 90, but it's still quick. But that first innings, that's the quickest that I've seen live.
And you're talking about Headingley as well, Ben, you know, and Headingley bought into it as well. You know, the roar, he turns round, he goes, he's got that long run up coming that down the hill. It was edgy, steep stuff. If it was breathless, and some of those deliveries were zipping down. I tell you, I would not have fancied that.
And he solved a couple of problems because obviously we had, through the series so far, Khawaja hanging around a bit too long and also slightly struggling to get rid of the tail. Well, he dealt with both those situations, especially in the first
innings. Yeah, and I don't think, you know, you look at Cummins, who played so well at Edgbaston and looked so comfortable. He's not going to look comfortable in the last two games. You know, he's not. Mitchell Stark, who's been a pest for England in the past, he can whack it. But against that kind of pace, I'm not too sure he's going to get too many. That's why I'm intrigued of the teams that are going to be picked for Manchester. I mean, you look at Australia, and Hazelwood definitely comes back in for Boland. And it's what do they do with Mitchell Marsh? He has to play. You know, you can't drop someone who's just got 100 and he got two key wickets. Cameron Green's fit, so he has to play. Tall bowlers at Old Trafford. There's two options that Australia could go. They could drop David Warner and rejig the batting lineup. They could push Marnus to open or potentially put one of the all-rounders up the top. Or they don't play the off-spinner. And they just pack the bat in and they just go full-out pace. If I was Australia against this England side, I think England love facing off-spin. And even though Nathan Lyon had a good amount of success in the first game, it was down to England's kind of gung-ho approach. Todd Murphy, a young off-spinner, looked very, very promising. But, you know, you could see Australia were a little bit reluctant to bowling in that second.
He didn't get a lot of overs.
No, and if I was the Aussies, I'd just pack my batting, pack my seam bowling, and just if you need a new tactic, just go to the bouncer tactic. No, you just kind of go for the bouncer fields that we've seen so consistently. So, yeah, I'm intrigued to see teams for Old Trafford. The England side as well is going to be interesting to see what they come up with.
Yeah, because, I mean, Woods, obviously, he has fitness concerns, so it's whether he can stay fit for the next two games. But if he
plays at Old Trafford.
Thought he's in the team.
Got a week off. Yeah. He plays.
But then Wokes as well, another new guy. Slightly eclipsed by Woods' performance, but he was great as well.
Played fantastic. What a skillful bowler. Fantastic in English conditions as well. And it was runs with Wood as well. Those runs and the runs that they gave, Wokes gave England as well. All these little bits and pieces. But he's a beautiful bowler, Chris Woods. Very experienced now. He knows what he's doing, you know. And if there is something in the pitch and there is a little bit of overcast conditions, I can't think of anyone else you'd rather have doing your bowling.
Let's get it straight, right? Yeah. Wokes plays. Wood definitely plays. Stuart Broad has to play. He's led this attack brilliantly. He's the leader of this attack. So there's your three. Ben Stokes isn't going to bowl much at all. Moeen Ali's going to play. He's probably going to stay at number three because it's moved Harry to number five. His position of strength. He looks so much better. He's not a number three at the minute. So it comes down to Ollie Robinson, Jimmy Anderson or Josh Tung. I know who I'm picking.
Tung.
And it's some
at Old Trafford.
I'm not picking Jimmy Anderson at Old Trafford. I'm picking Josh Tung at Old Trafford. I just think he's got that pace. He's bowled great. I thought he, you know, bowled so well at Lords that, you know, it was unfortunate that he missed out at Headingley. I just don't think you can... Look, if they feel that Jimmy Anderson's bowling that well and the pitch is going to suit Jimmy Anderson, of course, Jimmy Anderson will get a game. But you can't pick on sentiment at all in an Ashes series. And Josh Tung, at the minute, Josh Tung is looking more of a threat than Jimmy Anderson was looking a week or so ago. Whether the break would have done Jimmy the world a good, we'll have to wait and see. But as we speak now, I'd be playing Tung for Ollie Robinson and sticking the team as it is.
Okay, while we're talking about selection, on the flip side, a lot that was good up at Headingley, but Johnny Bairstow's beginning to have a series to forget, right? And those drop catches are really adding up.
Yes, they are. They are. Are you going to, you know, change a winning team? I'm not sure. I don't think Stokes and McCullum will change it. I mean, folks could easily come in, but how many more times can these little catches down the leg side and things like that not hurt you? They hurt England in the first two test matches. Luckily enough, they sort of managed to overcome them, but it's certainly going to be a sort of a talking point. And with the bat, but you just feel that Johnny's got something with the bat. He's got one of those innings in him that can really change a test match. So I think they're still going to stick with him, but I just don't think he's fit. I don't think he's fit after, you know, that horrific injury. I don't think he's played enough cricket, just sharp enough. I mean, he'll be better for the run out again. But, Mike...
But we keep saying that, Phil, we keep saying that. You know, sometimes in Ashes cricket, actually, the more you go and you've not done well, the harder it is. Because mentally, it's such a challenging series. It drains the life out of you because of the pressure, the expectation. Look, I don't think England will change it. But what I will say to the England selectors is don't be scared of changing if you feel it's right. Because I look at Headingley, and if you look at the players that did well at Headingley, Chris Wokes...
Well, this is the thing,
let's
right?
Let's well say, Ben, Chris Wokes has not been playing, so he came in fresh mentality. Mark Wood had not been playing, came in fresh mentality. Moeen Ali didn't play at Lords, came in at Headingley, did okay, got the two key wickets of Labuschagne and Smith. For Australia, Mitchell Marsh, he said it himself that he scored a test century on his holidays. You know, so all the four players that came in fresh did well, so... England shouldn't be scared. If they feel it's absolutely right, and you know, I'm sure the coach, the captain would have looked Johnny Bairstow in the eyes, and it's generally that kind of conversation that you have. And if it is that Johnny's gone, you know, and he's just, you know, struggling, don't be worried about it because he'll come back. He'll be back in the England side sooner than you know it. But you've got to get selection right. They've got to win the last two games. Yeah. And I don't think they'll win the last two games catching the way that they've caught so far. I think Australia will get them on at least one of the occasions. And the Aussie record at Old Trafford is pretty good. They play well there. They won here in 2019. And I think Australia will be better next week because Hazelwood replaced it. Boland's done nothing in the series. Hazelwood will be better than Boland. And I do think if they pack the batting, and they could have Alex Carey coming in at 8 and Mitchell Stark at 9, Pat Cummins at 10, England will have to get their selection right. I think they'll stay consistent, but don't be worried if they think it's the right thing for the team at this stage.
A lot of half chances have gone down. I mean, we could be 2-1 up.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously Johnny's getting a lot of the criticism, but they're, you know, most of the team, well, not most of the team, but there have been a lot of drop catches in the outfield as well. Is that something you can turn around quickly?
Well, it's just pressure, isn't it? It's pressure. You've just got to try and hold on to them. It's as simple as that, you know what I mean?
I don't think, Phil, of all the England teams that I've seen, I don't think this cordon's a great cordon. You know, it's not a rock. You know, I used to remember when Strauss, Swan, Collingwood, three in there, that was, and Pryor. Difficult as at times, but there was a consistent cordon there for a while, which was rock solid. I don't think this is a great cordon. Yeah, so they won't catch everything, but they've got to catch a lot better than we've
seen. Just those little half chances.
Mike, you got that scoop about Ali being promoted to 3 for the second innings. In one way, it didn't work because he didn't get a whole lot of runs. But on the other hand, it freed up Harry Brook, and he scored 75 off 93, batting at 5. Could be a big moment for him that innings because he's now proved he can do it against the best bowlers and in a pressure situation.
I think it was a masterstroke. I mean, it did work. All right, Moeen didn't get many runs, but it worked because it got Harry Brook back to the position that he's more comfortable in. The first innings when he went out there at number 3, let's be honest, he's not a number 3. At the minute in his career, he's not a number 3. And I think it was Moeen Ali that actually went to Baz McCullum on the third night and said, I'll bat 3. You know, so I think it was a really good call from Moeen to identify that the team would be better with him at 3 and moves the youngster to number 5. You know, I'm sure Moeen will stay there. I mean, it's I didn't care actually who went to number 3. It was irrelevant to me. It was almost like even if they'd have put Stuart Broad at 3, just to have a whack for it. It didn't worry me. I just wanted Harry Brook back at 5. And again, at Old Trafford, England, and I don't think they should be scared. All right, Moeen are probably back at 3 in the first innings. But don't be scared of using someone else at 3 in the second innings if it's not working for Moeen. You've got to, and I think this England side are doing things out of the box anyway, which is very clever. And they're not worried about what it looks like if, say, Mark Wood batted at 3 in the second innings just to go out and have a swing for 10 balls. You know, I don't think they'll be worried about what we think or what people perceive that decision to be. But I'm sure Moeen will start at 3 in the first innings. And if they're chasing something, you pretty much know now at the toss what England are going to do. So it's like, you know they're going to bowl. You know they're going to try and chase. And they've just got to be clever in terms of putting the right plays out there at the right times. But it was a very, very smart move. And it got Harry right into his position of number 5, which was...
He's got ice in his veins. We interviewed him on the ground after the game, and he's just come up like, all right, that's all right, not so bad. You know, and he didn't have a bead of sweat on him. He was just cruising around with a great big sort of smile on his face, played wonderfully well, done it on some sort of flat pitches in Pakistan, hasn't he, and what have you. But you're right, to do it there in that cauldron and get your team over the line, I mean, you know, you just sit back in your bed after and goes, listen, I can do this.
Phil, I'll tell you now, I thought Australia got their tactics completely wrong. Once Bairstow was out, if you look at the way that they bowled to Chris Wokes, they almost allowed him to get to 20 on the front foot. They should have just gone bouncing straight away. I'm amazed that the Aussies didn't realise that the only way that Wokes was going to play was be aggressive. Yeah. You know, and he likes to drive more than the pull shot. We saw him in the first innings get into problems playing the pull shot. I was staggered that the others just didn't bounce Chris Wokes straight away. They almost allowed, I think he got to about 24 before they started bouncing him. It was very strange tactics.
Now they know they're in a fight now, the Aussies, and momentum, there's a week off and all this kind of stuff, and the test starts again and you're all fresh and what have you. Well, they're not that fresh. They've got some overs in their legs, I'll tell you now, the Aussies.
Well, they're playing golf. A few of them gone golfing in Scotland this week, so they've done what England did before the first test.
It's all about golf.
Yeah.
Just play golf.
It was yet another sensational test at Headingley, and one person who certainly has a few fond memories of Leeds is the England spinner Jack Leach, who joins us now. Jack, welcome to the podcast. First things first, commiserations on your injury. Are you on the mend? And how hard has it been watching the Ashes from afar?
Thanks. Yeah, obviously not. It wasn't good timing with the injury, but I guess it never is. And yeah, I'm feeling good in terms of I'm not in too much pain. I was obviously in that game, and since I've stopped bowling, it's kind of eased off nicely. And now I'm sort of into the rehab stage, I guess, and just focusing on what's to come, I guess. And yeah, it's been it's kind of a bit of both, I guess. I've loved watching the guys like carrying on, I guess, what we've been trying to do over the last year or so. And you know, they've made me feel really part of it, even though I haven't been playing. So I've been around the group at Lords, and hoping to get to the next couple as well, so I can kind of go and see the physios and do my rehab stuff, but also say hi to the lads and, you know, give them hopefully a bit of positive energy. And it's just been great to watch them do their thing. But obviously, yeah, from a personal point of view, it was a series that I was really looking forward to. I think we all were, having come off the back of really good performances. And you know, I think it was the first time that I was maybe really relishing that challenge of playing the Aussies. I mean, think back to when we were in Oz, and just looking back, just did not feel ready for that at all. And yeah, I guess I felt a lot more ready for the challenge, and was looking forward to seeing how I could do. So it's a shame, but it's that's professional sport. It's a cliche, but yeah, it is. And just got to focus on what's next. And you know, I think something Stokesy said to us after the Ireland game, talking about the Ashes, was, you know, we're on a journey, and this is not the end of the journey after this series. So I guess that was kind of a good thing for me to hear when I was back was ragging, and I was thinking I'm probably not going to be in this series. Was actually, you know, I can now start to focus on what's next, which will be India. And, you know, that's where all my focus will be.
Jack Tuffers here. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. I'm good.
Good, mate. Must be so frustrating, you know. I mean, you're a big part of this England side. And then, as you say, to get that, how do you deal with that mentally? You know what I mean? It's all good being around the guys and what have you. But, yeah, how do you sort of, like, put that in a box and move forward? Because, I mean, it's quite a serious injury, isn't it, a stress fracture?
Yeah, no, it is. I think mentally, I think, to be honest, Stokesy and Baz have helped me with the mental side of the game. And I guess that's helped me off the pitch as well, in life as well. You know, you've got to take the rough with the smooth, and I think it's been about not getting too up and too down with anything that comes your way in cricket. But that's the same, I guess, in life. And it would be wrong to kind of have that mindset on the pitch. But then as soon as something goes wrong off it, you kind of don't have that same sort of outlook. So I think he's the whole mindset of how we're looking to play our cricket, take the positive option, you know, all these kind of things. I've definitely used them in my life as well. So, you know, I thank them for that. And, I'm surprised how well I've kind of maybe am dealing with it. There's low days for sure. Like when I feel like, oh, I'd love to be out there now, or, you know, but you kind of, there's no point in kind of dwelling on that. It's kind of like, looking forward, I guess, to what's next.
So do you sort of take this Bazball mentality into your day-to-day life, sort of going to IKEA on a Sunday, sort of out there smashing it around in the aisle?
Yeah, I do, to be honest. Like, I know Baz hates Bazball, but, like, for me, like, it's really, like, the mentality has really helped me just in general life, for sure. Like, and the way we've chatted as a group, you know, there's so many, you know, and we, you know, played golf together, and, you know, there's examples of it in golf. And no, definitely, I think it is, it has helped me for sure. And that's why I've been, I guess, such an advocate of it, and feel like it's a real powerful thing that people can use to help them in any walk of life, I guess.
Can you give us some insight into how Brendan and Ben have achieved that? Because it's all very well saying be positive, but it's quite hard to actually implement that. How have they done that?
It's a great question, I think, and it's one that I find hard to explain to people. I think, you know, sport's about how you feel, I think. And, you know, a lot of the things that happen is like, it's about, you get a feeling, and it's the way they make you feel rather than necessarily the words that they use. You know, I think there's something very powerful about people saying things and then actually backing it up with their actions. And then you start to really believe it. And that's definitely been the case with those two. I think that makes it an authentic thing. And yeah, I think just the care that they've shown for every individual in that group has been amazing. And yeah, in terms of how they've done it, I think they've been pretty consistent with their team selections. You know, it feels like quite a close-knit group now. And you know, maybe when you guys are calling for someone to be dropped, or, you know, they've actually stood firm with certain decisions. And I think that really grows like the confidence in the group. Because again, like, it's very easy for a coach to say, I'm going to do what I want to do, but I'm not going to listen to the outside. But then when that's backed up with the actions, I think guys start to really feel something special. So, yeah, that's definitely one way.
Jack Vorney here. I know this is a podcast and most people are listening, but in respect and honour of you, me, Phil and Ben have worn our glasses. Now, we're slightly disappointed that you haven't. Where are they?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's a good point, because I think I don't know where my cricket kit is at the moment, but my glasses are in my cricket kit. And I don't know where they are, because after the Ireland game, they were going to Edgbaston, and obviously I didn't turn up at Edgbaston, so they're somewhere in the country, but I'm not sure where.
So you don't know where your cricket kit is?
Not at the moment, no, because I don't need it.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So yeah, at some point I'll need to find that.
Now let's talk day four, Headingley. Obviously, you were right in the action in 19. The greatest, probably most famous one night out in the history of Test cricket. Where were you day four this time?
I was sat at home watching on my sofa, and I was actually listening and watching. I really enjoy. And this sounds a bit like I'm sucking up, but I do enjoy the TMS commentary. I just find it a little bit more soothing. I can kind of go in and out, whereas if I get too much on the TV, I kind of get engrossed, and my missus can get quite annoyed with me because I literally don't know anyone's there in the room. So, yeah, I think listening to you guys just keeps me on a nice... even place where I'm not too in it. So I was just watching at home, and it was great to watch.
When was it? So I was on comms when Johnny got out. Up until Johnny got out, I was telling everyone, don't worry, this is done, this is over. When Johnny got out, I was like, oh shit.
I think I was similar. I felt I was so confident about the chase. To be honest, again, like all the games so far, I've been confident, you know, heading into that final stages of the game that we would get it done. And obviously the first couple, we didn't manage to do it. And yeah, I think, but again, I think that's a reflection of where, you know, the confidence that we've got in the side, because I think previously, if we were chasing 250, we probably wouldn't have much confidence from the start. So actually to have that confidence, you know, for such a long period. And then obviously, yeah, Johnny gets out. But then I said to my mate, I was like, Wokesy's going to get it done. Mr. Cool. Like, yeah, obviously Wokesy. And then to have Woody coming in after he'd done what he'd done first innings, I was listening on the radio when after lunch and I was thinking, oh God, we're not in a great position here. And Woody came out and did that. And I was like, oh, he's just changed the momentum like that. And then Stokesy did his thing. And it's just brilliant.
Do you know, Jack, it's interesting that this England side, I mean, it's five times now in the last year that you've chased over 250 in the last innings of a game to win. As a spinner, and I'll ask both you and Phil, generally as a spinner, you want to be bowling last. But this England kind of side, they've become a one-day kind of style chasing test team. How does that affect you as a spinner when you kind of arrive thinking, well, we're probably going to have to bowl because we prefer to chase in that last inning? Does that affect you at all as a spin bowler?
I think one thing I felt like they needed to get Murphy into the innings sooner than maybe what they did, like in that sort of chase, because if, you know, if they got it under, like if we got it under 100, you know, and then Murphy comes on and goes for, you know, a couple of big overs, then it's, you know, so I think it actually made it hard to bowl the spin. I remember last year when we were chasing at Headingley with Bracewell and it was like a dry pitch, but, you know, we like played him really, really well on, and almost didn't allow him to bowl. And I think, yeah, it's just people are playing differently now, I guess. And so maybe the way you're going to take wickets is slightly different. It's not going to be a caught bat pad or, you know, these kind of like little ones around the bat. It might be caught long off or long on. If Stokesy lets me have a long off or a long on. But no, I think I was chatting to Mo about it and then we both sort of agreed, like, actually sometimes having that more attacking feel can make you bring more out of you in terms of the ball that you bowl, in terms of the energy you have to get on it, because you're trying to beat guys to hit your fielders. And actually if your mid-off's out and your mid on and mid off are out and you've got lots of sweepers, you can sometimes bowl a little bit defensively to that. So you know, this whole mindset of taking wickets has been like really, really good for me. You know, it just changes how you kind of look at the game, and you're not playing with like trying to not go for runs, which again is just maybe not a negative mindset. Not to say that you don't want to bowl tight. I think there's a lot of kind of think opposite ends. I can't think of the word, but you know, almost like sometimes the more you try to win, the further you get away from it. Like the more you try not to go for runs, the more runs you go for. It's like actually trying to flip things the other way, and trusting that, you know, your skills will come out in having that more kind of free mindset, I think.
You've obviously got a great relationship with Stokesy. I mean, you can see it on the field, Jack, you know, and he's brought this sort of mindset out of you. He's some cricketer, isn't he, and some captain.
Yeah, he's... I just really look up to him, I think, just to see, you know, some of the things he's done in this series. It's hard to, again, it's one of those things, it's hard to explain. It's just the way he makes you feel like, and he does make you feel like you want to run through a brick wall for him, because you know that he would do that for you. And that, like, feels weird that Ben Stokes would run through a brick wall for Jack Leach. Like, what? I don't get it. But he would. And that is like, it, again, it's like, he's not just saying things. He does them and he lives them.
Yeah, Jack, I mean, me and Phil have a bit of a chuckle about this kind of huge positivity that comes out of the England dressing room. You know, everything is, we're going to win 3-2. We can chase this. We will do this. Whereas back in our day, you wouldn't dare. you wouldn't dare publicly state that you were going to, you know, come back from 2-0 down. You just kind of hope that it happens and quietly try and get about your business. What is it that happens in this team room or in this dressing room that gets you what? Because every, you know, Brody and Jimmy have been around the block, and I'm not saying they're grumpy to old fast bowlers, but they are too grumpy to old fast bowlers. And their mindset and their positivity, and everyone that I speak to around the camp are so positive. How have they kind of got you all in this room and got you all speaking in this this positive sense all the time?
And so quickly as well.
Do they give you tablets?
No, but I think, you know what? We talk a lot, like before play, after play. There's a lot of like us kind of talking as a group, and we're always, so they're always pushing us in that direction, I guess. And like, don't get me wrong, in the last year, I've had times where I've walked off the field and gone, that's a bad day. Like, Baz can't be positive about that. And so, like, what are they going to say? And then I walk out at the end of the day and I walk back to the hotel and I'm like, oh, it's fine. We just get two wickets in the morning and we're fine. Like, and it is an amazing thing I've never, like, experienced before. And that's all I can really say on it. I mean, because don't get me wrong, like, some of the, you know, I would have used to have probably think, oh, that's arrogant, like, to say those kind of things. Like, you need to, like, and I think it's quite an English thing, is we need to, like, be quite modest and, you know, and I think that's maybe where I've seen a change in, you know, I think back to when we went to Australia and lost 4-0 and we weren't in any of them games at all. We should have lost 5-0 if it wasn't for the rain. So, and we were very modest and kind of, but we basically didn't believe in ourselves. And I think that's where you realize that actually, like, it's about believing in yourself. And sometimes you need to talk that up a little bit more. And that's okay. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to be taking your eye off the ball or, you know, and I'm sure it's frustrating for you guys at times. It's like, you see certain things and, you know, think, oh, these guys are not focused enough or, you know, but I think I think we are. And I think actually, like, sometimes the alternative of what it would be like is actually a more negative in your shell one, where, you know, and you can't half do something, you've got to fully commit, I think. And you know, I think as we go through this journey, hopefully, you know, we'll get smarter and smarter with how, with this positivity. Because, you know, you look at Stokesy, and actually when he goes in at 400 for five, he usually hits one straight up. Whereas when he goes in at 100 for five, he will take his time, do what he needs to do, and then go at the right time. So again, very smart with what he's doing. And I think he is the greatest example for all of us to try and look up to, is actually, what does this situation require of me? And if we are going well, actually, I'm going to push this game on. I'm not going to spend time just the game going nowhere. I'm going to push it on. But now this is a time for me to just soak it in a little bit and then go. But it's always doing everything within the game in a positive way. So even if you need to soak up a bit of pressure, do that in a positive way. And then so it's playing the game, like, and being completely in the moment and working out what the game requires of you. And I think Stokesy is the best example of that for all of us.
And it's like, Jack, in this, England are 2-0 down now, 2-1, but 2-0 down, they're all saying it's going to be 3-2. You know, it's only ever been done once before in the history of Ashes cricket, and that was when a certain Bradman was playing back in the 1930s. But there's something about, obviously, winning at Headingley, you just got to win one game at a time, but there's something about what this England side are doing and the way that they speak that, look, I used to think I was quite a positive player, but I'm a bit of a cynic as well, and I go, oh, it can't be possible. But the more I keep hearing that it's going to happen, the more I'm getting, like, I think I'm in your team. I'm like, the cult is getting me. it's almost if I'm arriving at Old Trafford next week and thinking, well, England will win there. It'll be 2-1. They'll go the week after the over. Yeah, it'll be 3-2, and they'll be celebrating on a bus ride. It's got me, but it's obviously not just going to happen, is it? It's about delivering performance. And to hold the nerve on the last day at Headingley, would that dressing room, because I know dressing rooms that I'd have been playing it, and let's be honest, the dressing room would have been an absolute nervous wreck, chasing any score, 2-0 down, have to win. What would it have been like inside that dressing room when the chase was on?
I think Stokesy said that he was pacing the dressing room for the last 20 runs. So, you know, that shows actually how much he wants to win. You know?
And shows he's human as well.
And shows that he's human. So, there's at the start of the day, we would have felt a lot of confidence, and I think maybe as the day goes on, then you start, you know, there's situations that you're in when Johnny gets out and you're thinking, oh, this could be tough, but then again, it's then the people who are out there having a clear mind to go and do what they need to do. So there, Wokesy and Brookie got the job done in terms of what they needed to do for the game at that point. So, I think what it is actually just, we always see the positives in where we're at, which obviously was 2-0 down. So the only positive thing to think about is what an opportunity to try and win 3-2. And then, okay, now we've made it 2-1. Can we imagine the Oval at 2-2? Like, and that's the kind of motivating factor that we use to kind of fuel our performances, I guess. And but we know that Australia are going to come back hard. So, you know, there's all these things in our way, but actually, how good would it be to go to the Oval 2-2? And let's go and see if we can do it. Not we're going to definitely do it. We are unbelievable. We're arrogant, blah, blah, blah. It's not that kind of thing. It's more, let's see what we can do. Like, let's see if we can make it 2-2. And then, wow, how good would the Oval be?
Throwing it forward to Old Trafford, Jack, yeah. Is there a little insight? Have you been up there this summer, or what's the pitch like up there?
I wouldn't have a clue, but usually I love playing at Old Trafford. I think it's usually a good cricket wicket, probably one of the best in the country in terms of feels like everyone's in the game early on, maybe does a little bit for the seamers, and good batting track, but then can spin, like you get big kind of footholds there. And usually a bit of bounce. So I think it should be, it's all made for a good test match. Obviously a great atmosphere usually there. I think the Old Trafford was a test after Headingley in 19, and I walked out and to a standing ovation, and I think everyone had their shoes off and was drinking out their shoes. So hopefully more of the same. And I think we tend to like playing up north. Those sort of grounds seem to be good for us, and the crowd is just epic up in those places.
Yeah, just on that. Sorry, Phil. Just on that. Yeah. You say the England side, and the England sides I played and used to love the Headingleys, Edgbastons, Old Trafford, because it's a bit raucous. It's like the football style, and it's great. Going to 2027, there's no Test match up north. What do you feel as, I mean, you'll still be twirling him away by 2027, Jack, I'm pretty sure. You'd want to be playing up north, wouldn't you, for at least one of the games?
Yeah, definitely. I think home advantage, you want to make the most of home advantage, don't you? And those grounds, you definitely feel like you've got potentially that. I think about going to Australia and the amount of stick I got, or we all got there. And maybe those grounds, you feel like the opposition gets it a little bit like you get it when you go to that place. And I think that actually can make a big difference. You know, they talk about the crowd being like a 12th man, and I think those places, it definitely is. So I think that's a shame. And I don't know what the reasons are, if you have to have cricket at different places or what it is, but it's like a
rotor system that's great. But I always say this, and I have for many years, the Ashes are the series that we all kind of play for. You know, that's what you build up to. And I've always thought that the captain, the coach, or the management at that time should be able to choose the venues. Obviously, Lords and the Oval, you're not going to change that. But the other three venues, particularly, look at Henley, 1981, 2019, now 2023. England's record at Henley is such a special one. I'm absolutely staggered that you won't want to play there in 2027.
Just play all five at Headingley, isn't it?
Perfect. Just get a few tents, park up in the local park, and then just stay there for 7 weeks.
Spot on. Yeah. Yeah.
Jack, we've mentioned Stokes's batting, and he's obviously had a couple of great knocks in this series, but the number one knock was Headingley 2019. And I know you're going to be asked about this almost probably till your dying day. And I hope you don't get bored of it. But can you give us some sort of insight what it's like being out there with him, what he's sort of saying, and how he's going about chasing down a total like that?
I think I'd obviously watched him in 2019 in the World Cup final about a month before. And I don't know. I always thought Stokesy was like just a sort of playoff instinct, not much thought. And actually with that innings, I just realised how clever he was with, which bowler he was going to target, to which boundary, when was the right time to go. Obviously, he had the plan of me facing one or two balls and over. And so, but actually be ready for the two. So there was a lot of tactics involved in it and a lot of thought. And then actually, once he's done that thinking, then when he's facing the ball, off instinct and play some unbelievable shots. So but very kind of calm. We didn't, this feels a long time ago now, but I don't remember us talking a lot in between. I don't know. And I kind of, that was the most focused I ever felt on a cricket field. Like, I just, he made my job very clear. You know, I had to face one or two balls. So every one that I faced was like a event. And I was like, right, whatever you do, don't get out. The only time I got distracted was when I saw him leaning over his bat, not watching me face. And I thought, you're joking, aren't you? And then, you've got no confidence. And then, I thought, shit, he's running in. I better quickly be watching. So, that was the only time I got a little bit distracted. But, he was just, and even what he said afterwards, and I could feel that was, he would rather he got out than me, because, he'd know it would affect me more than him. And, for him to sort of, just be that loyal sort of teammate is amazing, and something that I really look up to.
He said that after the game was finished.
Yeah, and that's why he couldn't watch, was because he was worried about me getting out. And obviously that, I think I was in my fourth test match or something, so how that would affect me. you know, he'd rather be the guy to get out. So yeah, I was surprised when he tried to run me out when the next line dropped it, but no, he didn't. He still claims that he was not running, and I claim that he was, but it's fine.
What was Jack, just quickly on that, you know, that run out when they threw it at Jack, threw it the Nathan line.
Yeah.
When you were then sort of like turning round and sort of trying to get back into your ground, what was going through your mind?
Honestly, like, I was shaking after that ball, and like, Stokesy came down to me at the end of the over, and I was obviously going to have to face six balls because we hadn't got a single that over, and I was shaking. The sweat was just dropping onto my glasses. And so I was like trying to clean them, and I like couldn't get my helmet back on, and he was like helping me, and like, it was a shambles. But that was, you know, I think it was a good lesson that actually the best moments in sport, there's usually quite a lot of luck along the way. And actually, so you have to take the rough with the smooth. And I think, you know, I came out of that so well that day, but I could have easily been hated after it. So, yeah, no, I just Stokesy, what a knock that was.
Right, Phil, do you want to?
Yes,
Phil, this is the biggest
either
part.
Or. Load up your either ors.
This is the biggest part of the podcast, Jack.
Okay.
This is quite stressful for you.
More sweat dripping down your face.
Yeah. Okay, right, okay, here we go then, Jack. First one. Strike rate or economy rate?
Ooh. I assume when I'm bowling, strike rate.
Yeah.
Strike rate.
Love it. Next one. 5 for 66 versus New Zealand at Headingley, or that one not out?
We won those games. I'm going to go 5 for 66. I am a bowler. And if I could do the same thing 10 more times, I'd take 10 more fivers than 10 more one not out.
Good shout. Taunton or Headingley?
I'll go for. Well, I'll go for Headingley.
Go on, Jack.
Wow.
I've done some big stuff there, mate. I'm not surprised. Right, now this is an interesting one. Least enjoyed, bowling at the Gabba or bowling at the MCG?
Gabba. Gabba was the worst experience of my life.
Really? Why? Why? Just how it came out?
Oh yeah, it was not good. And I remember getting a lot of abuse on the. Actually, I got a lot of abuse everywhere, but a lot of abuse. And I remember feeling pretty low and thinking. I remember thinking, at least I get paid well for this when some Aussie was chirping me. And then I got off the field after the game and we were five overs down on over rate. And they said, you're not getting paid anything. You've been fined 100% of your match fee. And I was like, wait, so I've done all of that for free.
But that was the tour where you played on the green tops, but you didn't play on the pitch that actually spun at Adelaide.
Oh no, it didn't work out well. It didn't work out well in that way. But just a good tour to write off and try and not forget. Try and forget.
As Brodie said, the Ashes, it's void. It's void.
Doesn't count.
It's all been wiped off, so you can forget about that one.
Yeah. Right, last one then, mate, as well. Last one, you've done very well. An extra net session or a round of golf? Not a fan of golf, are you, Jake?
I'm trying to get into golf, but now I can't because of my back. I'd be lying if I didn't say an extra net session, but Baz would want me to play golf because he knows, and he's dead right that a round of golf would probably be better for me mentally than another net session. So,
not bad, Jack.
Yeah,
it's kind of extraordinary, though, isn't it? England coach, rather you play a round of golf than have
a
session.
Well, not just play golf all the time, but he knows that I've done enough that I don't need to do too much, you know. And actually, he's dead right, because I've had loads of times in my career where I've overtrained and overthought about it and bowled worse because of it, you know. And he's all about, you know, saving your good stuff for the game and doing enough that you're in that sweet spot, ready to give your best. So I don't disagree with him at all.
How does he gauge whether you've done enough, though? Does he leave that to you to decide, or does he have a view on what enough is enough?
He leaves it for you to decide. Like there's if you want extra, you can have extra. But I guess he'll just make sure you're doing it for the right reasons. And there's a point to it, because I think we do a lot of training where it's just because that's what we've always done. What are we trying to get out of it? Like, what do we need to be ready to perform in the middle? And I think that's what he'll always try and make sure we're getting right, rather than, you know, I've done so much training in my life where it's been because I'm worried about how I'm going to perform. And I'm like, I'll just do more and more. And then you're actually going into the game tired because you've done too much. So I think that's been a really good viewpoint for a lot of us, is actually just knowing when we've done enough. And we've got such a build-up of training over our careers that actually, it is just about making sure our bodies are ready to go. And, I still do way too much, but it's just good to have that kind of voice of reason, I guess, where it's saying, no, you're right, because your voice in your head is going, do more, like, you need, this is a test match, this is really important, people are gonna be questioning you need to do it. And again, if you're training in that mindset, I don't think you're gonna be free to get the best out of yourself. So I think he's always that voice kind of saying, no, you're good, like, you're in a good spot. So he's been really good for me.
Leachy, last one, is it going to be 3-2 to England?
It could be. We'll see. I think
you need to have one of those tablets, because you would have said it will be if you'd have had a tablet.
No, because it's harder when you're not able to influence it. So, I would. I don't see why not. I think, you know, we've won some. You know, when we've got on a roll before, we've kind of won a lot of games in a row. So, let's see what happens. But it's going to be exciting, whatever happens. You know that.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah, it'd be fun to watch. Jack, thank you so much for your time. Been
Cheers,
brilliant
lads.
Chatting with you.
It's been
Cheers,
good
Jack.
Fun. Thank you.
Right, we're joined as usual by Nick Holt, the Telegraph's chief cricket correspondent. England, so I understand they've just named their squad, an unnamed squad for Old Trafford. Do you think we'll end up with the same starting 11?
No, I think Jimmy Anderson will probably play for for Ollie Robinson. It's between Josh Tung and Jimmy. I'd be astounded if they didn't pick Jimmy Anderson on his home ground. Actually, Jimmy looked pretty sharp bowling at Headingley on Sunday in the nets and during the lunch breaks. The break's probably done him good. I spoke to him yesterday and he feels that he's recharged the body a little bit. He's got over his disappointing first two tests. He says the pitch at Old Trafford is going to be hopefully similar to Headingley. So that may suit him more as well than obviously the first two that he played on.
Yeah. And Ollie Robinson, he was having those back spasms. Has he not recovered from that? Or is the expectation that he won't recover in time for Old Trafford?
I think given his history with those back spasms, he had a similar problem in the Caribbean on Joe Root's last tour and didn't actually manage to make an appearance. So I think they're very wary of rushing him back from those back spasms, because the last thing they want to be is a bowler down, obviously. So we were told that he would bowl in the Australia second innings, but he didn't. And so you just wonder whether that was a little bit of sort of kidology on England's part. I expect he'll take a break. The plan probably was for Stuart Broad to not play, but obviously he's bowling so brilliantly, the Ashes fever has taken over him again, and he's got David Warner on toast again, so he will definitely play. So I imagine that the only change will be Anderson for Robinson. And Chris Wokes, obviously you can't leave him out, can you, after that performance at at Headingley?
Yeah, Wokes and Wood, yeah. Yeah, both play brilliantly. Obviously, the slight concern with Woods is that he struggles to string multiple tests together because of his problems with injury. So is there any news about whether his elbow's holding up?
Apparently the elbow was fine, and that was a major worry because he was reporting pain in the elbow when he bowled at Lord's, which is only a week before. But he seems to have got through the test match fine. He spoke to us all after the game on Sunday. He was confident that he can play the rest of the series because he's done it before. He doesn't see why he can't do it again. And obviously, with five bowlers, the option is that you can bowl him in short bursts rather than having him bowl long spells, which is what happened on the last Ashes tour, actually, towards the end of that series. He was bowling a lot of overs, and that took its toll. And this time, I think they're just going to use him in short bursts. I mean, he bowled, I think it was seven in a row towards the end of the Australia second innings, which was a surprise at the time. And you did worry, here we go again with Mark Wood. But obviously, with a break in mind, that was probably why they did it. So, yeah, I expect Mark Wood to be fit and fiery for the next test. The question will be whether he's still standing upright by the time they get to the Oval.
And clearly he was sort of box office on the pitch, but he was also a good value off it. He seemed to be having a lot of fun in the press conferences and the interviews after the match. Is he one of the more entertaining players to interview?
Absolutely. I think he's probably the most entertaining player to interview in the England team that I've ever dealt with. I mean, you never know what's going to come out of Woody's mouth next. And he's a bit different as well from all the others, because I spoke to him earlier this summer, and he talking about golf, and he said, well, I'm the only non-golfer and the only teetotaler in the team, apart from obviously when Murray came back. So, you know, he says, I do set apart. I have to do a lot of driving around for Ben Stokes. But he's universally liked. He's lively company. He does have his downs. You know, he can beat himself up a little bit off the field when he's had a bad day. So he does need picking up. But he's an absolute live wire, and there's nothing better than watching him steaming in. And the Aussies have got a lot of respect for him, actually. It was interesting after the press conference on day one when he took the wicket. There was a little session where, little moment where he walked past Pat Cummins in the corridor at Headingley, and Pat Cummins was very respectful and said, "Well, bowled, mate, that was awesome." So, you know, they don't always say that to England bowlers. So, yeah, there's a lot of respect there.
Yeah, fair enough. And what are you picking up from the Australians? Are they just sort of dusting themselves down? They're obviously, Pat Cummins is still bullish, still pointing out that Australia are 2-1 up, but it's got to take a bit of a hit to their confidence losing the way they did.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. Marnus Labuschagne's in a really interesting position because his wicket in the second innings really sparked the turnaround. I mean, they had almost two hands on the Ashes urn at that point. And he's struggling, and he's really looks in a bad way mentally at the moment. I don't think Steve Smith has played that brilliantly, apart from his 100 at Lord's. Last time, if you remember, after they lost that game at Headingley, they had a county match at Derby, and that really brought them all back together again. This time they're doing it slightly differently. They're all disappearing all over the place. Quite a few of them have actually gone to Europe for breaks with their families because they've all got their wives and children with them to completely get away from it all. So it'll be interesting to see whether that works and clears their mind. But yeah, they're 2-1 up, and England really know that they need a little bit of luck and have to play at 100% all the time to beat this Australian side. But yeah, I think they definitely needed a break. Pat Cummins, I think himself, looked pretty shot by the end of the Test match physically. So he needs that break, definitely. And I don't know whether he's going overseas, Pat, because his family's wife's from Yorkshire, so I don't know whether he's actually stayed in this country or not.
And the England side, how are they using this? Because this is probably the biggest break, because obviously the Test finished a day early, and they've got a big break before Old Trafford as well. So it's probably the biggest break in the series. How are England planning to use that time?
Most of them will be playing golf, probably, and having put in their feet up. Moeen Ali said that he's going to get in the nets, have a bit more practice, because he's obviously expected to probably stay at number three now. Jimmy Anderson said to me yesterday that he's going to go in for a bowl this week. I suspect Josh Tung will be doing the same. The rest of the guys, I would be surprised if they do anything until Monday morning, which is when they're due to net at Old Trafford. There was talk of them netting on Sunday, but I think that's been cancelled now, that they'll net on Monday instead. But you can bet your life the Aussies will be there over the weekend.
Yeah, I bet. Well, great, Nick. Enjoy your time off between the Tests. I'm sure you're still working hard, but good to talk to you as usual.
Cheers, thanks. Thanks, Ben.
And of course, there have been two other Ashes wins since last we spoke. The women in their T20 matches at the Oval and Lords. Did you guys get a chance to watch those?
Yeah, I watched them both. Yeah, good games. I mean, Alice Capsey in that second game at Lords.
That was impressive. Knock.
She's going to be around for a long time, and they're still in it. Yeah. There's 350 over games to go. They've got to win them all. Starting at Bristol on Wednesday. I don't think the England team are that far off Australia. Even in the Test match that they lost, I thought there was moments in the game where they could have triggered a different tactic. I thought Sophie Eccleston should have opened the ball in the Test match in the second innings. She didn't come on until the score was 80 odd for none. I didn't get that. But I don't think they're far off. I mean, the Aussies are obviously a world-class team, but you never know. They're almost like in the same position of the men's team, is that they know what they have to do. They've just got to win three games. Yeah. I don't see the women team talking as positively as the men team do quite yet. They've not quite had the same tablets. They need to send a few of the tablets into the into the women's dressing room. But they're not far off, but it'll take some to win three on the trot against this Australian side.
What do you make of the mixed format series and having the Test right at the beginning? Because there's so many points on that, it sort of made it almost like sudden death knockout for the rest of the series.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I think it works. It's almost a bit like baseball, isn't it? It's like the whole series is added together. I would have loved, and I know I understand why they play the Ashes together with the men, and it gets a lot of profile. I'd have loved the women's Ashes to have a standout moment next summer. You know, the men's summer next year is not a great one. It's not a hugely profiled one. I think it would have put the women's Ashes to next summer. The women's Ashes would have been the absolute pivotal of the summer for English cricket. And maybe that's what we can do. Because look at the crowds they're getting. Loads of people are wanting to watch. The big audiences on the television. They deserve a standout summer of their own for the Ashes.
That's all for today. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Phil. And massive thanks to Jack Leach for chatting with us too. If you're new to the podcast, and I hope you're not, Mike, Phil and I will be here every Wednesday throughout the summer. Previous episodes from this season are all available online, featuring the likes of Justin Langer, Sir Geoffrey Boycott and Adam Gilchrist. If you have any feedback, questions or comments, the address is cricketclub@telegraph.co.uk, so please do drop us a line. And we'll be back with you again next week ahead of the fourth Test at Old Trafford. So until then, goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.